Next up on Express Yourself, I am so pleased to be joined by Alia Howe, founder of the Poetry Market, co-creator of Poets on Purpose, and curator of Writ Large and The Salon, introducing today a new project that will premiere on KDNK Airwaves, the Antiviral Project. How are you, Alia?
I am really well, thank you. Chilling here at home.
And it is National Poetry Month, very exciting reason to dive into poetry, especially in these times of quarantine.
Yeah, I think poetry, unlike storytelling, gives us the focus to just distill to the essence of what we're feeling, experiencing, seeing, without having to explain it in any particular chronological order. And I think it's the perfect time just to let the raw expression of our feelings just be shared. And we're going to do a Zoom weekly meeting probably, so that poets who want to gather and follow prompts or share their works can, and then they can be presented on Antiviral, where we plan to share tight prose and slack lines.
Yeah, I find personally that I've been writing to just process some of the emotions that are coming up, with our reality really shifting in a dramatic way. I think that it's easy to consume too much media and really important to take those times to sit in silence and let things bubble up and find the language that our soul is seeking to express.
Yes, I totally resonate with what you're saying, Raleigh, and I really hope that you'll share your voice with us on this segment on KDNK.
Absolutely. I would be so honored to. Alia, has poetry always been just a clear beacon of light in your life?
No, but expressing myself has. My first creative influence was my father, a phenomenal pianist. And everyone in our family had to play the piano, and we had then the option of what our second instrument would be. And just the feelings and the colors that music would evoke. And then I always wanted to move to the music, and so it was an easy segue into dance. But neither of these art forms use our normal form of expression, which is language, or the language of words, which we use every day. And after having been a silent dancer for X number of years, having been a silent musician, words began to really become to be a part of my imagination and my creative process. And I joined a company called Dance Teller, where we would dance and speak, we would share stories, we would share poetry. And that was my entrance into really creating and being a part of multimedia works, where you use the medium that most eloquently said what you wanted to say. And if it was in an art form that I wasn't experienced in, then I would look for collaboration. But we all speak, and we can all just sit down. We don't have to do any major preparation for writing poetry. You could just sit down and look at what's in front of you, or put yourself somewhere and look at what's around you, and just write to it, respond to it, begin to have a communication that everything, with everything that is in your environment.
And so you mentioned that you are going to hold virtual meetings for local poets to have the opportunity to share some of their work and get inspiration from one another. How can people link up with you to make that a reality for themselves?
My email, which on the outro of this segment will be there, aliahowe@me.com. You can reach out to me. You can reach out to me on Facebook and just see my posts and say, hey, I'm interested. There's a Facebook page called The Poetry Market, or there's my Facebook page, Alia Howe. And if you just share your interest, I keep pausing for a few days before I set a new thing in motion. So it will probably come into motion next week. And over the weekend, we'll decide what day. I'm just waiting for feedback from people about what are the ideal times. So not decided yet, Raleigh. Can people reach out to me? And I will post it on Facebook.
For our first antiviral segment, would you like to talk a little bit about some of the poems that will be presented?
I feel really excited and touched that these professional poets and wordsmiths responded instantly to reach out to our community to share about what's happening. Rosemary lives in Telluride, and like us, we have a pretty wide girth from what's going on in the metro areas. And Stefano is living in New York, right in the belly of the beast of COVID-19. And his reality is really, really different, as are my friends in New Jersey, Philadelphia, and New York. It is really, really alarming and real in a way, in a tangible way that they can see the makeshift hospitals in Central Park. So these are contrasting poems and experiences reflecting on this moment in time.
And then the third poem presented by yourself?
Just that I was nervous reading this poem. It's a long poem. And I was nervous because Natalie Diaz is not of my culture. And I have a sensitivity to reading these powerful words. But the reason why I wanted to read these words is because in my self-isolation, I'm walking around River Valley Ranch, and I'm watching and thinking about water use on a golf course that when I bought into it was going to be xeriscaped right at the very beginning. And then somehow or other, the demand for lawns overrode the idealistic, the wise idea to xeriscape in high desert. So this poem speaks to what's going on here, and also speaks to this moment in time to take a pause and have a look at how we consume, and can we change our attitude towards consumption and be more sustainable.
All right, well, without further ado, Antiviral, beginning in this National Poetry Month of April, so appropriate.
Welcome to Antiviral, where we share tight prose and slack lines. I'm Alia Howe, founder of the Poetry Market and co-creator of Poets on Purpose, a monthly gathering focusing on generating new poems, sharing new works to be aired at KDNK's Poetry Slams. I've been curating poetry events for the last 5 years up and down the valley, and we are waiting for the go-ahead from KDNK to present a live poetry program. Until then, here are some tight prose and slack lines.
Hi, this is Rosemary Wattola-Tromer from Placerville, Colorado. The shelter in place has been, of course, I say sometimes I feel like I'm going back and forth between doom and grace. Teetering on the edge of each of these. And I wanted to share a poem that's about some of the grace that's come out of this. I have a teenage son. It's a prickly time, of course, and everything in a teenage boy wants to push away against his family. And yet there's this enforced closeness. This poem is called Quarantine. This morning, my teenage boy and I sit quiet on the couch. He does not move to pick up his phone. I do not rise to work or rush to make a meal. We sit, leaning the trunks of our bodies into each other. We do not say much. I close my eyes and cherish his sapling weight. There are so few people I dare now hug. Our hands, our bodies dangerous. But here, in this house, so still I can almost hear him growing. Here, in these minutes that fell off the clock. Here, I remember how surely we baptize each other with touch. Such simple blessing. Silence. The metronome of breath. The leaning in. Infectious love.
The Modern Family Does Not Touch by Stefano Defray. The modern family does not touch. It cannot reveal the midnight sirens on Broadway replaced by crashing lines to Bellevue Hospital. A thud, bam! A stubbed toe, looking for a spare key under neon city lights. My mother wakes, sees me, stumbling through my childhood door, and we pass each other with a nod of the head and polite, meaningless words on our way to separate sinks, 20 seconds, soap, and a clean conscience. Earlier, I promised my father that we wouldn't touch. My mother finds me, holds gravity still, and asks if I still feel alone today. And I thought, before I had done, of mocking how longingly I wished to be in her arms. Her eyes were pale from bleach used in our home. And there we stood, less than 6 feet apart, two criminals from separate roofs, one embracing the other.
This poem I'm going to read, for me, is an invitation in this self-quarantined time to reflect on our lifestyles and what serves and supports all of life, sacred life, here on the planet. And this poem is from a book called Postcolonial Love Poem by Natalie Diaz. And I may mispronounce some things. It's an absolute privilege to read her poem, and I apologize for any mispronunciation. This poem is called "The First Water is the Body." The Colorado River is the most endangered river in the United States. Also, it's a part of my body. I carry a river. It is who I am. Aha, Macav. This is not a metaphor. When a Mojave says, Inyech aha Makavich ithum, we are saying our name. We are telling a story of our existence. The river runs through the middle of my body. So far, I have said the word river in every stanza. I don't want to waste water. I must preserve the river in my body. In future stanzas, I will try to be more conservative. The Spanish called us Mojave, Colorado, the name they gave our river because it was silt red thick. Natives have been called red forever. I have never met a red native, not even on my reservation, not even at the National Museum of the American Indian, not even at the largest powwow in Parker, Arizona. I live in the desert, along a dammed blue river. The only red people I've seen are white tourists sunburned after staying out on the water too long. Aha, Makav, is the true name of our people, given to us by our Creator, who loosed the river from the earth and built it into our living bodies. Translated into English, Aha Makav means the river runs through the middle of our body, the same way it runs through the middle of our land. This is a poor translation, like all translations. In American imaginations, the logic of this image will lend itself to surrealism or magical realism. Americans prefer a magical red Indian or shaman or fake Indian in a red dress over a real native. Even a real native carrying the dangerous and heavy blues of a river in her body. What threatens white people is often dismissed as myth. I have never been true in America. America is my myth. Jacques Derrida says, every text remains in mourning until it's translated. When Mojaves say the word for tears, we return to our word for river, as if our river were flowing from our eyes. A great weeping is how you might translate it, or a river of grief. But who is this translation for, and will they come to my language's four-night funeral to grieve what has been lost in my efforts at translation? When they have drunk dry my river, will they join the mourning procession across our bleached desert? The word for drought is different across many languages and lands. The ache of thirst, though, translates to all bodies along the same paths, the tongue, the throat, the kidneys, no matter what language you speak, no matter the color of your skin. We carry the river, its body of water, in our body. I do not mean to imply a visual relationship, such as a native woman on her knees holding a box of Lando Lakes butter, whose label has a picture of a native woman on her knees holding a box of Lando Lakes butter, whose label has a picture of a native woman on her knees. We carry the river, its body of water in our body. I do not mean to invoke the Drost effect. This is not a picture of a river within a picture of a river. I mean a river as a verb, a happening. It is moving within me right now. This is not a juxtaposition. Body and water are not two unlike things. They are more than close together or side by side. They are same body, being, energy, prayer, current, motion, medicine. The body is beyond the six senses. It's sensual, an ecstatic state of energy, always on the verge of praying or entering any river of movement. Energy is a moving river, moving my moving body. In Mojave, thinking, body and land are the same. The words are separated only by the letters E and A, Imat for body, Amat for land. In conversation, we often use a shortened form for each mat. Unless you know the context of a conversation, you might not know if we are speaking about our body or our land. You might not know which has been injured, which is remembering, which is alive, which was dreamed, which needs care. You might not know we mean both. If I say my river is disappearing, do I also mean my people are disappearing? How can I translate, not in words but in belief, that a river is a body as alive as you or I, that there can be no life without it? John Berger wrote, true translation is not a binary affair between two languages, but a triangular affair. The third point of triangle being what lay behind the words of the original text before it was written. True translation demands a return to the pre-verbal. Between the English translation I offered and the urgency I felt typing, Aha, Makav, in the lines above is not the point where this story ends or begins. We must go to the place before those two points. We must go to the third place, that is the river. We must go to the point of the lance entering the earth, and the river becoming the first body bursting from earth's clay body into my sudden body. We must submerge, come under beneath those once warm red waters, now channeled blue and cool. The current's endless yards of emerald silk wrapping the body and moving it swift enough to take life or give it. We must go until we smell the black root wet anchoring the river's mud banks. We must go beyond the place to a place where we have never been, the center, where there is no center. Beyond, towards what does not need us and yet makes us. What is this third point, this place that breaks a surface, if not the deep cut and crooked bone bed where the Colorado River runs, a 1,450-mile thirst into and through a body? Berger called it the preverbal. Preverbal is in the body when the body was once more than body, before it could name itself body, be limited, bordered by the space body indicated. Preverbal is the place where the body was not. Preverbal is the place where the body was yet a green blue energy, greening, greened, and bluing the stone red and flood water, the razorback fish, the beetle, and the cottonwoods and willows shaded shadows. Preverbal was when the body was more than a body and possible. One of its possibilities was to hold a river within it. A river is a body of water. It has a foot, an elbow, a mouth. It runs. It lies in a bed. It can make you good. It has a head. It remembers everything. If I was created to hold the Colorado River, to carry its rushing inside me, if the very shape of my throat, of my thighs is for wetness, how can I say who I am if the river is gone? What does aha makav mean if the river is emptied to the skeleton of its fish and the miniature sand dunes of its dry silten beds? If the river is a ghost, am I? Unsoothable thirst is one type of haunting. A phrase popular or more known to non-natives during the Standing Rock encampment was, water is the first medicine, it is true. Where I come from, we cleanse ourselves in the river. I mean the water makes us strong and able to move forwards into what is set before us to do with good energy. We cannot live good, we cannot live at all without water. If we poison and use up our water, how will we clean our wounds and our wrongs? How will we wash away what we must leave behind us? How will we make ourselves new? To thirst and to drink is how one knows they are alive and grateful. To thirst and then not drink is... If your builder could place a small red bird in your chest to beat as your heart, is it so hard for you to picture the blue river hurtling inside the slow, muscled curves of my long body? Is it too difficult to believe it is as sacred as breath or a star or a sidewinder or your mother or your beloved's? If I could convince you, would our brown bodies and our blue rivers be more loved and less ruined? The Whanganui River in New Zealand now has the same legal rights as a human being. In India, the Ganges and the Yamuna rivers now have the same legal status as a human being. Slovenia's constitution now declares access to clean drinking water to be a natural human right. While in the United States, we are tear gassing and rubber bulleting and kenneling natives, trying to protect their water from pollution and contamination at Standing Rock in North Dakota. We have yet to discover what effects of lead-contaminated water will be on the children of Flint, Michigan, who have been drinking it for years. America is a land of bad math and science. The right believes rapture will save them from the violence they are delivering upon the earth and water. The left believes technology, the same technology wrecking the earth and water, will save them from the wreckage or help them build a new world on Mars. We think our bodies as being all that we are. I am my body. This thinking helps us disrespect water, air, land, one another. But water is not external from our body, ourself. My elder says, cut off your ear and you will live. Cut off your hand, you will live. Cut off your leg, you can still live. Cut off our water, we will not live more than a week. The water we drink, like the air we breathe, is not a part of our body, but is our body. What we do to one, to the body, to the water, we do to the other. Toni Morrison writes, all water has a perfect memory and is forever trying to get back to where it was, back to the body of earth, the flesh, back to the mouth, the throat, back to the womb, back to the heart, to its blood, back to our grief, back, back, back. Will we remember from where we've come, the water? Once remembered, will we return to that first water and in doing so return to ourselves, to each other? Do you think that the water will forget what we have done, what we continue to do? Thank you, Natalie Diaz, for your incredible potent words, which really resonate deeply with me as I walk around my home on River Valley Ranch and watch new houses being built. What about the water supply? When I first bought here at River Valley Ranch, I bought in to the fact that they said they were going to xeriscape, that they were going to honor that we live at high desert. But there are so many lawns here, as though we lived in the lush, watered lands of the East Coast. I find it bizarre. I really hope that during this time of quarantine, of self-reflection, we have a look at how we use our water and plan to honor it and preserve it, so the waters of the headlands of the Colorado River can reach all the way down, down, into Mexico and back to the ocean. Thank you for listening to Antiviral, where we share tight prose and slack lines. If you would like to submit a recorded poem, please send it to raleigh@kdnk.org or aliyahowe, aliyahowe, at me.com and title it Antiviral. At the beginning of your recording, please include your name, where you live, what has COVID-19 been for you? Then pause and breathe, prep for your poem, and when you are ready, read. Thanks again for listening. Till next week, be well, cultivate safe habits.